Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Affney, the program that's a kind of owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to the glory of God and his kingdom. We're going to jump right into a conversation with one of the people that I've come to admire most in Washington. She's actually not so much in Washington, at least at the moment, but she has become a phenom in Washington, that's for sure. Her name is Natalie Winters. If you've been watching Steve Bannon's show of late, you know that she is his co-host and executive editor. She is also one of the most formidable people of any age, of any gender, all 52 of them, in the business of journalism today. I am proud to say she's become a friend as well as somebody, as you can tell, I'm an enthusiast for, especially in light of something she's just shared with me, which we're going to put up in lights here today, and that is a new Natalie Winters production. She calls it She's So Right. You're going to hear more about it from her directly. But Natalie, before I just turn the floor over to you to talk about that, I did want to give you an opportunity just to set the stage. You've done such fabulous work, especially for your tender years, on exposing what the Chinese Communist Party is up to and the mortal threat that it poses to us. You've done it in so many different ways, the COVID business, the corruption of our government, the extent to which they are on the march with unrestricted warfare and the shooting war kind, unfortunately, coming too, I'm afraid. Talk a little bit about why you think it's important that we disengage from and otherwise stop propping up the CCP.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Frank. And I always say you give the best introductions and you have not disappointed yourself. So thank you for your kind words. I think similarly highly of you, and to go full circle, back when I was in high school, I know I texted you this, I would watch your videos and stuff that you guys produced, whether it was on China or Islam, and seriously, it gave me really the viewpoints that I hold. So I'm eternally blessed and grateful for all the work that you guys have done. But you know, you're so right. You made my life and my viewpoint. So thank you.
Thank you.
But you know, as I was getting ready to launch this brand, I was sort of looking back at my investigative career, the stories I had written, and it has been a diverse array of topics that I've covered, right? Whether the origins of COVID, more traditional Chinese Communist Party infiltration, even what's going on in Ukraine, and of course, political compromise. And that, I think, sort of speaks for itself in terms of the threat that we face with the Chinese Communist Party, right? It's vast and far-reaching. It's not just limited to one sector. It's not just even limited to politics. So that was really what I think made me realize that I wanted to start a brand. Of course, it's all made in the USA, focusing on bringing manufacturing back home. But I think really when you take a step back, even brand, clothing, fun stuff aside, I think we're at a point geopolitically where we cannot support the Chinese Communist Party anymore. And that doesn't just come in the form of buying products that are made in China. You, of course, know with the Belt and Road Initiative, even if you're buying products made in basically most other countries, you're probably indirectly propping up the Chinese Communist Party too. And I think that is really what is so evil about the system, is that consumers are not given the option to buy items that are basically not made in China or any of their tributary states. And I think that that's purposely by design. And I think you see these big corporations partnering, of course, outsourcing to China. But I think people don't really grasp how nefarious of a system it is when these companies go overseas to operate in China. I'm not even talking about the intellectual property theft, but something that, I mean, honestly keeps me up at night is Article 7, right, of China's national intelligence law, where they can requisition any company, any person, even just a Western company that's doing business, registered doing business in China, to achieve the ends of the state. So when you think you're buying a product that's made in China, you know, if you think you're sort of indirectly supporting them, you're quite literally propping up a regime who, in their own words, wants to destroy the United States, hates all of the values that we stand for, and are using a host of, as you know, unrestricted warfare tactics. Sure, it hasn't become kinetic yet, but we're at war with them. And I don't think we'd be giving our money to Nazi Germany in the time of World War II. And I think that that's a fair comparison to make. So I wanted to give particularly women the option to not have to buy into that business model anymore.
Yeah. Well, you've, as always, articulated brilliantly the nature of the problem. And it is just gobsmacking that so few of us have an appreciation of what you've just said. And it's notwithstanding your best efforts and our mm-hmm. modest ones as well. But it does set the stage perfectly for what you are trying to do about it, which is to give people a choice. In a lot of places, you don't so much have a choice. So tell us about your product line. Tell us about where it stands at the moment and how people can find out more about it.
Well, I think that the lack of choice, it really is all by design. I sort of see it in a similar light as I do vaccine mandates and COVID lockdowns, right? It's stripping Americans of the ability to basically live life as they so please. And I think I would throw for most people watching the show, the people who watch The War Room, that supporting the Chinese Communist Party is not one of those things that they would consciously want to do. But unfortunately, because of our American elites, the ruling class, the economic policies, the trade policies they've set up, it's so hard to buy USA-made goods. So what I really set out to do with this brand, the fun designs, as you can see, my shirt says misinformation. We've got low social credit score, a little bit conspiratorial, more insecure than the border. Some really fun designs that I don't think the political apparel market has really seen. They're subtle, they're fun. You could wear them day to day and you won't probably get heckled or killed. But I really wanted to set out.
Let's hope not.
Let's hope not. Yeah, sure. That's great marketing, great branding, right? But I really set out what I wanted to do with this, the designs, the fun stuff aside, to make USA made clothes at a price point that is not a ridiculous premium. And by keeping everything in house, I mean, I designed the website myself. I designed everything myself. I did all of this myself. I'm coordinating with all the factories out here. I really was able to keep the prices on par with China made goods, with, you know, whatever country made goods. And I think that is what I really found so interesting throughout this whole experience. And I've been blessed to partner with factories who are very committed to reshoring manufacturing jobs to the United States, but in a very sustainable
way. There still are some of those.
Yeah, with living wages, right? You hear from the elites that Americans don't want to work in factories. They don't want to do these manufacturing jobs. But that's just because they've been watered down so much because of the exporting to China model. So I really have, it's amazing. And it's not so much me, it's more these companies that I've partnered with. But that was really to do USA made goods, but sustainably and stylishly, and not, again, not in the way the left uses the word sustainably, really was my goal and passion behind doing this.
Yeah, I'm going to turn to sustainability here in a moment with you, Natalie. Can't resist. But, you know, this is now a thing. You can find Natalie Winter's products how, and its brand, as I understand it, is She's So Right, which is a multiple entendre, I think, both you, the creator, as well as the product.
Well, it's so fun. This is one of the first shows I'm doing on it. We just launched, so it's so cool to hear it, and, you know, you guys saying it. But you can go to shesoright.co, not .com. Got to sue for that domain. No. But to get all the products, we have hats, t-shirts, tanks, sweatshirts, bags. And I think also too, from the fashion perspective, for the people in your audience who are fashionistas, what I think really differentiates us too, and what I was very cognizant of going into this, is I think a lot of political apparel, you know, it's these kind of bulky t-shirts. We know there's a difference between men and women, and I don't think political apparel reflects that, right? It's not flattering. It's not, you know, form-fitting. So we have a bunch of styles that really prioritize the fashion angle of it. So it's not just a fun phrase on a design that you can't really wear. So if you want to shop it, like I said, you can go to shesoright.co, and then on social media, where shop She's So Right.
Fabulous. Hold the thought. We're going to come right back with more with the creator of shesoright.co, Natalie Winters. Stay tuned. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. A House committee will hold a hearing next week aimed at finally beginning the impeachment of Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. He should be charged with treason for facilitating 10 million aliens' illegal entry. Exhibit A should be an April 2023 memorandum ordering key Customs and Border Patrol officers to streamline the admission of Chinese nationals, including tens of thousands of unaccompanied military-age men believed to be People's Liberation Army Special Forces personnel. Instead of undergoing hours of vetting, these ticking time bombs are being speedily let in and distributed all over America. Thanks to Alejandro Mayorkas and the rest of Team Biden, we are now facing a countdown to chaos. Several divisions worth of China's troops and countless jihadis are poised to wreak havoc here. We urgently need new leadership committed to protecting America, not betraying and imperiling all of us. This is Frank Affney. Welcome back. We're continuing our conversation with the inimitable, and I mean that literally, Natalie Winters. She is not only an extraordinary journalist and a woman with an ability to communicate that is, well, unsurpassed, I think, particularly for a person of her tender years, but now we're also able to celebrate her entrepreneurial prowess, having brought to fruition a vision of how you can help disengage from Chinese communism with a brand she's calling She's So Right, a fashion dimension of which is now available, and I suspect there's more coming, but we'll hear more about that anon. But Natalie, I can't help but take advantage of your incredible expertise to address a couple of other issues, and I wanted to sort of pick up on something you sort of just touched on, but I think informs much of what you do, is the evidence that what we're really confronting, particularly from the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party, but more broadly, especially here in the United States now, is evil. That we're engaged in truly a spiritual war between evil and its hosts, and I think indisputably the goodness that is and certainly has been America and what we need it to be in the future. And I wanted to ask you this in connection with some reporting that I know you've been doing, War Room has been doing a fabulous job on it, the evil coming across our borders and the damage that has been done by essentially destroying them by, among others, Alejandro Mayorkas, who is now going to finally, I guess, be subjected to some sort of impeachment process, praise God. Tell us a little bit about specifically the nexus of these two subjects, the Chinese Communist Party's exploitation of that open border and what it portends.
Sure. Well, I think this story is probably the best piece of evidence in the perennial, you know, intentional versus incompetence debate of the Biden regime. And I think when, you know, speaking more broadly on the concept of evil, right, when you look back to like 2016, if you remember Turning Point's slogan, right, it was big government sucks. And it's like that phrase in just the last, I guess, little under a decade is not even relevant anymore, because what we're up against is not just big government. It's the collusion of big government, big tech, big pharma, all of these supranational entities like the WEF, the WHO, the UN, the CCP. And I think that this story, which has to do with Chinese invaders, let's call them what they are, coming across our porous southern border, shows how calculated all of this is. And it's by design. It's great reporting from the Daily Caller, but internal, basically leaked emails from CBP show that the Biden regime has been watering down the vetting process, which I think you can only describe as to allow more Chinese nationals into the United States, to allow them to proliferate across the country. And how they're doing this, they've dropped the requirements for how many questions they ask these migrants. It used to be 40 under Trump. Now it's just 5. Some of the questions that they've now omitted are Are you trained in weapons and arms, which seems like something you'd want to know? Yeah. They've also
if I could just interrupt you, Natalie, sure. Because this, you didn't say this specifically, but when you use the term invaders, I know you're using it advisedly, because as mm-hmm. our mutual friend, your boss, Steve Bannon, is pointing out relentlessly, thank God, there may be divisions worth of people who aren't just Chinese nationals, they're unaccompanied, military age, fit, young men who seem to be making up a sizable proportion of that invasion. And, you know, to not inquire about whether they might actually have a background in, say, oh, I don't know, the Chinese People's Liberation Army Special Forces, would seem to be, and I think this is the point you were getting to, not just an oversight, not just incompetence, but something else. What would you call it?
Yeah, it's evil. I mean, it's treasonous. But Frank, it goes even further. They also stopped scanning and cross-referencing phone data from any of these migrants with government records having to do with either terrorist groups or hostile foreign regimes, of which the Chinese Communist Party should be first on that list. But I think it goes to what you said. This is all by design, because there's no other way that you can justify these policies applying specifically to the Chinese Communist Party. But honestly, Frank, it's par for the course with the Biden regime, right? I always say it's unrestricted warfare. And especially when you see all these, you know, food processing centers and train derailments going up. I mean, those are tactics that, let's not be, you know, naive here, are totally weaponized by the Chinese Communist Party. And sure, the White House may not be flying the Chinese flag yet, but the whole point of unrestricted warfare is that if you infiltrate and subvert the personnel, right, personnel as policy, to the extent where you can't create a meaningful backbone to stand up against the Chinese Communist Party, I mean, look no further than the Chinese spy balloon debacle, then of course you're going to get policies like this. And all of the decades of work from emanating from the United Front and all of these foreign influence groups, the money they've given to the Hunter Bidens of the world, it's a very high ROI. And that's the way China conducts their global policy. We do it with drag shows and DEI, but China does it with hardcore foreign influence operations.
Yeah, and so much more. And you pack more into a soundbite than anybody I know. So you've covered a lot of ground there. I did want to ask you about one other thing that I had a chance to talk about with Steve yesterday, as it happens, that is the antithesis of the disengagement that you rightly are saying we need to make here. It's engaging the Chinese, the Chinese Communist Party, it would appear, in managing our public lands and waters and even the air, and possibly private property as well, Natalie. And this is in the form of something called natural asset companies, and we're talking about it here, and I'm so grateful that, you know, you guys are doing it at War Room now too. We have less than 2 weeks to prevail upon the Securities and Exchange Commission not to essentially enable the great, not just, you know, land grabs, but the possibility that we will see those lands weaponized against us, at least in the form of having them locked down so that we can't use them. What could possibly go wrong with that in the hands of the Chinese Communist Party?
It's unrestricted warfare at its finest. And honestly, I think the lesson that we learned from COVID, from the lockdowns, I think frankly, is that this is all part of a bigger plan. I think there's collusion elements going on here. But I think the real evidence of that isn't so much, you know, the Event 201s of the world, the reporting I've done, the reporting you've done, but any logical person on the heels of COVID would realize that having foreign ownership of the United States land, let alone by the Chinese Communist Party, who can weaponize our supply chain weaknesses against us, that is a bad idea. No other way to spin it. So the fact that these people have continued to pursue those policies, or that the Anthony Fauci's of the world and our kind of biomedical scientific complex, right, the NIHs, the NIAIDs, have continued not just to fund EcoHealth Alliance, but have continued, right, to fund research collaboration with China, it shows you that they didn't learn their lesson, because they were never rational observers of the conflict in the first place. They've always had ulterior motives. And this story that you guys have been hammering on is so important because I think it speaks to that, right? It's not that the Chinese Communist Party wants to own land because it's a good investment. Sure, maybe it is, depending on how the dollar goes, although honestly, with de-dollarization, probably not. They want to own it because they want to exploit it, right? It's as simple as that. And look no further than the story that I came on to discuss with you guys not too long ago, right? Meanwhile, the Biden regime is giving the CCP carte blanche on the agricultural front, setting up quite literally collaborative working groups between the United States government and the Chinese Communist Party to invite us to work together. The Chinese Communist Party should be nowhere near America's food supply. But frankly, Frank, I think part of it is the tributary state critique that you see Steve always saying, right? I think at this point, our elites are so far down the river in their allegiance to China, they don't believe America's worth standing for. So of course they're going to be in bed. They're going to partner with the Chinese Communist Party.
All I can say is she's so right. Go to shesoright.co to find out more about how right she is. Thank you, Natalie Winters. God bless you. Come back to us again soon.
Thank you so much for having me.
Be right back with more right after this.
Night after night, in cities across the country, black garbed assailants clash with police in the streets, smash windows, and throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa: Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa and provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa: Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
Welcome back, and a very special welcome to our next guest. Her name is Jennifer London. She is the widow of a remarkable man who I had the privilege of working with as a member, among other things, of our Center for Security Policy Board of Directors. His name was Dr. Jack London. Dr. Jennifer London is a PhD in psychology. She's also a practitioner of the black art of marketing. She has been consulting with very important companies across the country, including CACI International, which Jack London was the executive chair of for many years. Jennifer London, it is wonderful to have you back and to celebrate, at least briefly for the moment, the publication last year of a new and important contribution from the London team, published posthumously, alas, with Jack's passing. But talk to us a little bit about this important work, Profiles in Character.
Well, as you know, Jack was the executive chairman of CACI International. And many years ago, he was very concerned about the trend in character in our country with problems with companies like Enron and individuals like Bernie Madoff. He wrote a book called Character, the Ultimate Success Factor. And that was in 2013. It was sort of a call to action to try to get individuals to really focus on the importance of character. And over the years, I think it became even more evident.
Individuals, particularly in the business sector, but I think more generally as well.
Yes. Right? And in the past few years, in our leadership, in our government. And so as we looked at our children and their role models, we realized a lot of them were social media influencers or animated superheroes and so on. I mean, whereas our role models used to be in the military, the government, public service, they were being replaced by celebrities and people on social media. So Jack decided to look again at the importance of character and to write about it. He actually was the, you know, it was his brainstorm that came up with the individuals in the book. There are 16 Americans profiled, and it's sort of using the same model as Kennedy used when he wrote Profiles in Character.
Profiles in Courage. Quite famous, but Profiles in Character is a very important complement to it, isn't it?
Yes. And he read the book. In fact, he had a copy, a signed copy from President Kennedy of Profiles in Courage, about individuals who followed the principle and values rather than, to do what was, they made the decision to do what was right, not what was wrong. And weren't concerned about the consequences. And Jack worked with people like that during his military career, World War II veterans, admirals, who would detach themselves from the consequence of their decisions, doing the right thing, even if it meant there was blowback or a negative consequence to them. And so he looked at historic.
And as you say, Jack was a distinguished naval officer in his own right, rose, as I recall, to the rank of captain, and served with distinction both in uniform, but also as a very, very important defense contractor executive, and a model really for character that you call us to heed in this book. And Jennifer, I did want to talk to you a little bit about a couple of the characters in the book. I know Teddy Roosevelt was one that you had a hand principally in writing after Jack's passing, but talk a little bit about some of these figures that you want us to regard as models.
Well, they were all individuals who impacted our history and who contributed to the country in various ways. Some of them actually had opposing paths that they chose. We start out with Thomas Jefferson, his power of persuasion, George Washington, his sense of duty. Think about our current leaders and how they emulate this, or do they? You know, that sense of duty, the sense of responsibility that Eisenhower showed when he wrote the letter taking responsibility for the D-Day invasion failure, if in fact it failed. And he said it was him and him alone. He could have blamed everybody if that had failed.
Reagan, this was written before the event and really put it all on the line in the event that things went bad. And I guess this is really the point that you're trying to get across, is that the sense of integrity, as well as the character that, you know, informs it, is so vital. And to address specifically the question you just raised, looking at our present crop of leaders, and for that matter, our society more broadly, these are not qualities that are being extolled or emulated much, are they?
Yes, and I think the common denominator that I go back to is our children. There are so many things impacting our children. Education, are they getting the education they need? What messages do they get from society and from the educational system? A lot of them are told there's something wrong with themselves, their gender. Children are going through these transitions and ultimately many people who go through these gender transitions end up committing suicide. Where are our spiritual leaders? Where are our mental health professionals? The number of transitional operations are 1,000 more than in the past. It's in the thousands. So, and also, what kind of education are they getting? Are they learning? I mean, children being graduated from high school without really having the basic qualifications for being successful in society. Many of them are illiterate. So, we look at the children of our next generation. I feel like we're losing a generation. And again, that sense of character, who are the role models? We look at our government, and a lot of those leaders are fighting, and the language they use is shocking. And the individuals that we chose in this book, Martin Luther King, who believed in peaceful resistance, where are those leaders today? Teddy Roosevelt, whose sense of optimism about everything. I mean, when you look at what he accomplished at a very young age, being Secretary of the Navy and President, and was it a Nobel Prize, I believe, and also a great author. Oh my goodness. And then the Panama Canal, the French got 9 miles in 7 years. He said, we're going to do it. And we struggled. Should his trait be determination or optimism? We went back and forth. And finally, it was optimism that drove him. And Amelia Earhart, who, you know, broke barriers, not only in a field dominated by men, but she was a trailblazer for women. But more importantly for me is that she competed with herself. She raised the bar on herself to excel at every level. If we could, if we could teach our children today the importance of competing against themselves and reaching higher and higher goals, think about the impact on our society instead of saying there's something wrong with you.
Yeah. Well, and also, I just have to say, endlessly inculcating in them a sense that there's a lot wrong with our society as well and our country. And, you know, one of the things that I so admired about Jack and have always appreciated about you as well, Jennifer, is your love of this country, your appreciation of what it affords us all in the way of opportunities. And if we only have that character, if we only have that, I think integrity is an incredibly important part of that. We can do almost anything. Yes, optimism and so on is important, but the opportunity that the country affords us, and to hear, and you mentioned our educational system. I'm thinking about other forces at work as well. And as a psychologist and marketeer, you know more about this than I, but the extent to which we are watching instruments of political warfare like TikTok be used, really weaponized, as I say, against our kids. We're watching it in connection with these, horrifying, demonstrations of support for a murderous terrorist organization like Hamas, being something that these kids are encouraged to go out and do by TikTok. Talk a little bit about, what that's doing to our society and our country as well as our kids.
Well, I was in on a seminar put on by the U.S. Naval Institute about artificial intelligence and what was going on with, technology. And one of the participants said, there is a battle for our minds. And that stuck with me because I feel that's happening a lot with our children, the things that they're exposed to. I see my children going on YouTube and sometimes TikTok, which I try to avoid, but they are powerful tools and they do influence our children. And going back to what you said about our country, we used to have national pride. We used to have a national identity. I would like to ask people, what is our national identity? Have we lost that? Jack said in his memoir, which is called Ever Vigilant, that came out last year posthumously, that as we traveled around the world, we traveled all over the world, the more he traveled, the more he came to appreciate the treasure that America is. And people who live in America that haven't seen that world perspective, they seem to be the ones who bash the country the most because they don't have that perspective. But they're also not being taught that in our schools. And it goes back to our children. What are we demonstrating? What models are we giving them? And that's why, we have the book, Profiles in Character. This is a paperback version. There's also the coffee table. But these people who impacted our country and are good role models, they're throughout several generations. We need to find them in our current generation, and our children need to see them.
Absolutely. Thank you for this real public service in publishing this book posthumously with your husband, Jack London. Jennifer London, this is a real service, and we desperately need to build on the insights that you've provided. And I hope you'll come back and talk at greater length with some of the individual characters that you've profiled. We're out of time. I have to let you go. Come back, though, soon, if you would. Okay. Jennifer London, Profiles in Character.
Thank you.
We'll be right back with more right after this.
The
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. A House committee will hold a hearing next week aimed at finally beginning the impeachment of Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. He should be charged with treason for facilitating 10 million aliens' illegal entry. Exhibit A should be an April 2023 memorandum ordering key Customs and Border Patrol officers to streamline the admission of Chinese nationals, including tens of thousands of unaccompanied military-aged men believed to be People's Liberation Army Special Forces personnel. Instead of undergoing hours of vetting, these ticking time bombs are being speedily let in and distributed all over America. Thanks to Alejandro Mayorkas and the rest of Team Biden, we are now facing a countdown to chaos. Several divisions worth of China's troops and countless jihadis are poised to wreak havoc here. We urgently need new leadership committed to protecting America, not betraying and imperiling all of us. This is Frank Affney. Welcome back, and a very special welcome to a woman that I have only really just met, but have come to admire tremendously for her, well, her knowledge, but also her ability to communicate about a subject that I believe every one of us must now be seized with. And that would be this issue that I touched on earlier in the program with Natalie Winters, namely the so-called natural asset companies. That the folks on Wall Street are intent on having us begin investing in as publicly traded companies. Let me do that from the top. Sorry, I got garbage. Here we go. Welcome back, and a very special welcome to our next guest, a woman that I've only really just met, but have come to admire tremendously for both her knowledge and her ability to communicate about a somewhat arcane subject for most of us, but one that I believe is so fraught, so really dangerous for our country, that it should be top of the agenda for all of us. Her name is Margaret Byfield. She has a background in, well, cattle management, among other things, but also a lot of litigation and activism on behalf of property rights, one of our most foundational rights in this country. She's incredibly articulate on the subject as the leader of the executive director, specifically of an important organization, American Stewards for Liberty. We're delighted to have her here for the first time, but I hope it will be the first of many times to come. Margaret, thank you so much for taking some time with us. Welcome and congratulations on the work you've been doing to raise the alarm about these so-called natural asset companies.
Thank you, Frank. And let me thank you for jumping into this issue. I mean, you have dove into this and really understood it, the details of this very quickly. So it's pretty impressive. This is something that we've been tracking since September of 2021. So I'll back up a little bit. We exposed the 30 by 30 campaign that the Biden administration initiated January 27th of 2021, which is the agenda to permanently protect 30% of our lands and oceans by 2030. And by permanently protect, we're talking about no use of these lands. Ultimately, that is their goal, meaning no oil, gas, mineral, recreation is going to go. All of these things will not be allowed on these lands. That's the ultimate agenda.
So as when you say recreation, do you mean prohibiting hunting, for example?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah. I can go into detail why that is, but absolutely, recreation is on the chopping block. They normally, what they do with these agendas is they cater to the recreational groups and say, hey, support what we're doing, and you'll always have access. But over time, that access gets curtailed and eliminated. And so you have to understand what is their end goal to see that that is ultimately where they're going. And
before you go there, could I just ask you to just build on who they are in this context?
Sure.
United Nations, you've mentioned, but who else?
World Economic Forum, Jeff Bezos, all of the people, Bill Gates, all of the people that are behind the climate crisis narrative, that agenda, those are the same people who are pushing to permanently protect the world's land and oceans, 30% by 2030. So the agenda is 30 by 30. It's not just an American initiative. It's actually been implemented in other nations for many years. If I know you're watching what's happening in the Netherlands and Germany with landowners there, their land being taken away. Well, those entities have been under something called Natura 2000 for a number of years. And that is our equivalent to 30 by 30 in America. And so it's a really good illustration of where we are headed if we allow 30 by 30 to be fully implemented here in the States.
And give us a sense of what that looks like in places like the Netherlands and Germany at the moment.
Well, in the Netherlands, the farmers, there were 2,000 to 3,000 farmers that were told they would have to voluntarily sell their land to the government in order for the nitrogen emissions that they were emitting through fertilizer and cow droppings, those kind of things, in order to curtail that, they were going to have to voluntarily sell 2,000 to 3,000 of those farms to the federal government. So they have been under this 30 by 30 agenda for called Natura 2000 over there. And it's, I think the best way to explain these regulations, how these come into play so that your audience gets a better understanding of this. The governments will come in and say, hey, we are here to help you. We are here to help conserve the land, to help you sustainably use the land, right?
Margaret, my old boss, Ronald Reagan, said the most dangerous words were, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. And
Exactly. You're
about to make that point in spades.
Exactly. And so, and along with all this help comes the federal dollars. There's always money attached to this because that is the carrot that gets landowners to sign up for these programs. We're seeing it happen right here in America right now. Climate smart programs. You know, our administration, the USDA in particular, from day one of the Biden administration has been throwing money at our landowners, our private landowners, to get them to sign up for these conservation programs. And there are so many different forms of what these look like. The main thing you need to understand about these conservation programs is they create a federal nexus to the private lands. So if there's federal funding attached to the lands, then there's other laws that are on the books that can come into play, like the Endangered Species Act, and there's a whole host of them. So the main thing to understand is when you sign up for a government program or a landowner does and accept that federal money, understand you've now put a federal nexus, a tie for the federal government to restrict or regulate to some degree. It may be a small degree, but enough of a degree in order to start controlling your property. Mm-hmm. So that's
what, and that's the key point, is it may start small, but it exactly. doesn't stay small.
Yeah. And getting back to the recreational groups, it's the same concept. You know, they are told that, hey, help us implement 30 by 30, and you will always have access to many more lands now that are going to be protected from development because we're not going to allow that. So you're going to have even more places to recreate. And as a result of that, when 30 by 30 was first initiated, there was a website that went up called Hunt Fish 30 by 30 that was signed and supported by major recreational groups across America as they were sold this bill of goods, including the National Rifle Association. So they're very, very good at kind of courting the recreational organizations to support and get behind things like this. So that's how the recreationists get involved in these.
So this is the background to how the federal government, or I guess state and local governments for that matter, can get their hands on not just the public lands, obviously, but private lands as well. And what we're going to get to next after a short break, Margaret, is the extent to which these new mechanisms that they're trying to conjure up, these natural asset companies, as they're called, become a vehicle for exercising that control in a way that essentially precludes the productive use of these natural resources. Margaret Byfield is with us from American Stewards for Liberty. We're going to talk with her more about what all this means for you and why you need to engage in this fight now, right after this. We're back, and we are visiting with Margaret Byfield of American Stewards of Liberty. I have been corrected. They are for liberty for sure, but they are also stewards of all of our freedoms. And we're so appreciative in particular of the attention that's being paid by that organization, and Margaret, who is its executive director, to property rights, including yours. Margaret, I wanted to make sure that we allocate some time to this issue that is likely to put the whole, control enterprise of this, I call them green weenies. This is an expression that I grew up with in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where it was a term for fans, I think, of the Pittsburgh Pirates, but it applies to these characters. They are hard at the business of locking down our country. And how could this new class of companies, if it's approved by the Securities and Exchange Commission, which is considering it right now, transform this into a vast new means of controlling public and private land?
Well, first off, you're more polite than we are. We call them the climate crisis cartel because it's the same group that has been working to sell the climate crisis narrative to the public, lock up our lands under conservation protection, the 30 by 30 agenda that we just talked about, for the purpose of this next step, which is what is being represented with the NACs, the natural asset companies. They have been working to lock up this land so that they are the ones who are going to profit from these lands. And that's what the natural asset companies create, is they create this new investment vehicle where our federal lands can be enrolled in it, like our national parks. Private lands can be enrolled in this, like conservation easements, into these NACs, so that the wealthy elite, the climate crisis cartel, and sovereign nations, sovereign wealth funds like from China and Russia, can invest in these vehicles, potentially profit from these vehicles, but more importantly, ensure that these resources are natural resources, Americans' natural resources, are not developed. And that, of course, has horrible implications for the American people. But this is kind of the end game, I think, what they have been building up to through all these other agendas is to get to this point where they ultimately are going to do exactly what they've said. They will own everything. We will own nothing.
30 and by be 30, happy, as they yeah, are fond be of happy. Saying.
Yeah, 30 by 30 clears the title. 30 by 30, the people that 30 by 30 hurts are the American middle class. We have to understand that America was founded on the idea that the people would own the land. It was by the people owning the land that we could control our government and limit their power over us. So that's why your eastern states are largely private, because we were still being settled under that idea that if we have a great constitution, but how do we protect it? We protect it because the people own the land and the resources. Therefore, we have the power to control our government.
You know, on this point, if I may just interject, one of the things I was so impressed by in the founding approach was that it was only people who owned property, white males, but people who owned property as well, who were given the right to vote initially. Well, that's a means of assuring that you not only have skin in the game, but also that principle is central to this republic. And it's changed over time, obviously, but the principle is still foundational.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I mean, that really demonstrates how important the ownership of private property was and how important it was that the people owned that property. We the people, not the government. And that's really what changed when the West was settled. Most people don't realize that 50% of the West is owned by the federal government. I mean, the West is federalized. We can already
now. See is it really owned by the federal government, or is it supposedly appending their, turning it over to the states, which, as I understand it, is what they were supposed to be doing?
No? Yeah, that's an issue that has certainly been debated, I know that Utah has led pretty strongly on that issue. And, that's probably going to be something that's going to be debated for a long time. But, we look at this from the perspective, but we're here now. you know, functionally, the federal government owns and controls that land. There are rights to that land, such as the states own the water on all of those lands that the federal government owns, and they own all the wildlife. So there are particular rights. Your rancher owns the right to graze that through the grazing allotments. So there's, and then a mining company will own the mineral rights, and an oil and gas company will own the oil and gas in the lands. So it's split up.
Unless you get something like these natural asset companies that wind up being able to control the land, manage it, and then ultimately own it as well. Is that right?
Yeah. So for a natural asset company, anything that's enrolled in the natural asset company, any of the lands or the rights that are enrolled, must then be managed for their sustainability. The only activities that will be allowed are those that are replenishable. So immediately, mineral development, oil and gas, absolutely not going to happen in these NAC areas. So these are all things that...
And how about farming? Does that apply to farming as well?
So farming is going to have to be done sustainably. And so regenerative farming, think of things such as no chemical fertilizers, very limited equipment. Everything needs to be done very naturally. So
mules and plows, are we reduced to that?
Some cases, you know, I think, and this gets back to how they're going to put this in place. They always start very nicely, easy. We are here to help you. Of course, they're not going to lock down our lands. Of course, we're going to be able to farm and ranch. But little by little, those things will be squeezed out.
Yeah. Quick question, and we're almost out of time. 30 seconds. Would they be able to put solar farms and wind farms and the like on these things as long as they're sustainable?
I think as long as they're going to make they define what sustainability is. So they can easily define it so that, yes, you know, those are sustainable activities, so they can legitimize them.
So the wildlife and all the rest of the natural arrangement is to be damned in case of these kinds of companies. We have to leave it at that for the moment, Margaret, but we're going to have you back. We're very anxious to have everyone address this at sovereigntycoalition.org. Tell the SEC, keep these companies out of the New York Stock Exchange. God bless you. We'll talk soon. God bless the rest of you. Come back to us for more next time. Until then, go forth and multiply.